Well, everyone, thanks for coming. It's a pleasure to talk to you today. What I'm going to talk about, some vulnerabilities backed up by real-life stats. Where do we get the stats? And then we'll look at some sort of common trends and themes that seem to come out from when we look into them a little bit deeper. So just a little bit on myself. My name is Raheem Jina. I am COO and co-founder of a company called EdgeScan. I'll explain what that is in another slide. We're an Irish company. I'm Irish. I'm half Irish, half Indian. Clearly have the Indian name, but I like to think I got the Irish sense of humor. Just kidding, I have no sense of humor. So I used to live here in LA, so it's brilliant to be back. I love coming back any chance I can. So yeah, it's good. To top up the old vitamin D levels, it's very miserable at home. And there's a hurricane on the way, actually, at the moment, which I've just been checking in on. We don't get hurricanes usually, so it's unusual. So where are we going today on our magical journey, talking about vulnerabilities? So I suppose we're going to start off, we're going to talk about, the data well, so to speak. Where do we get the data? What is it? We're going to look at the model, what we are analysing, looking at some of the different sort of things that come out of it. The stats then, we'll actually look at some of the raw stats. Everybody loves stats. And then we'll look at some themes that are coming out of that. And I suppose you know, the, not to jump to the conclusion, but a lot of the themes are, it seems to be quite basic stuff, which seems to have a big impact. And then that's the end of our journey today. So talking about the data well, where does the data come from? Well, it comes from EdgeScan. What is EdgeScan? It's a vulnerability management platform. So we're looking for vulnerabilities. I say high frequency. People say continuous. Continuous is sort of a marketing thing, because, you know, there's starts and stops to it. So we'll say high frequency. We're looking for vulnerabilities full stack. So we're looking at application layer vulnerabilities, and then lower down the stack, network and host layer type issues, patching, stuff like that. So we're looking for vulnerabilities all the time, and then we're populating that data. Customers can see, hey, I've got problems, blah, blah, blah. The data is manually validated, so we like to think we don't have any false positives. I don't want to say false positive free, because that's impossible, but you know, there's people looking at this stuff. And it's a continual thing, right? So that's fine. So hence, what we found, the platform itself is live about 5 years now. We have all this cool data, and we thought, hey, we need to do something interesting with this. We get to see how, what the different types of vulnerabilities that seem to keep cropping up, different time frames, when different vulnerabilities come out, how prevalent are they, how fast are people fixing these things, all this kind of stuff. And there's lots of different things you can learn when we look into it. So this is our fourth year doing a stats report. So we have a team now that works on it every year, which is great. What we do is we analyse the previous calendar year's worth of vulnerability data, so we're pulling that stuff out there. The last 2 years, which has been great, we've been submitted our data to the Verizon, people at Verizon who do the DBIR report every year. So our data is a subset of that data that they analyze for the breach report, which is cool. We have compliments on the cleanliness of our data 2 years in a row, so that's great. The data itself is obviously thousands of web applications, IP addresses, anything, could be servers, can be anything with an IP address effectively, APIs, etc. So looking at the vulnerabilities in these assets, we'll call them. Things are validated. This year we added in an extra piece. We have there's a visibility piece to it where we're looking for, not vulnerabilities, but we're profiling assets. So we're kind of seeing what systems are live, when, what services are running on them, things like that. And there were some interesting stats that came out when we analyzed that piece as well. So there's a bit on that. And we're also looking at, not just internet-facing assets, we're looking at internal assets. Some clients we do internal scanning and stuff. And the notions of internal are sort of getting a bit more blurred now with cloud, etc. But a lot of those more traditional organizations still have the notion of the external perimeter defending, the internet accessible stuff in the internal. So that's that. Right, jump straight into this. So From a vulnerability standpoint, what we found in the last year, that the this is by volume, so 81% of network, of vulnerabilities by volume present themselves in the network layer. So we split it network and app layer. So app layer is anything layer 7, if you think about the OSI model, you know, web apps and APIs and things like that. Then we have network layer, anything beneath that effectively. So the reason we split it out, I suppose there's different, I suppose there's often many, you know, different teams involved in, you know, maintaining and fixing the vulnerabilities in the two different threads. Sometimes it's the same, sometimes it's not. But traditionally, the AppSec and the network security, you know, the market has been split that way. So we're looking at everything as a whole, but we still, you know, from a staff's point, it's interesting to split them up that way. So by volume, 81% of vulnerabilities are in the network layer, but only 2% of high and critical risk issues found were present in that layer. So more issues, usually much more low risk issues. Whereas, you know, by volume, nearly a fifth of issues are in the application layer, but, you know, usually enough, you know, nearly 90% of high-end critical risk issues found in the last year were present there. So there's a much higher risk density present in the application layer. Yes?
And it's self-hosted cloud environments.
Sorry?
Self-hosted environments, cloud.
Yes, that's a mix. That's just anything app layer. So there's a split on the next one, which looks at, well, so we're here is very much from an internal and external split. You know, so I suppose there's, you know, some clouds will be external, some cloud will be internal, depending on what way you've positioned your system. So, you know, I suppose the notion of the protecting your external, I mean, that makes sense. You know, the lines there in people's organizations are a little bit more muddy these days. But it is how you would expect it. The stuff on the inside is generally more neglected. There's definitely higher, more issues, more higher risk issues found in there still. And, you know, I suppose the prevalence of malware and stuff these days, it can be easy for these things to take hold once they get inside your network, because people generally sort of, not neglect, but it's definitely less attention in most organizations for internal, you know, network and application security. So we're going to look at the most common app layer web, we say web vulnerabilities, but let's talk about application layer vulnerabilities. We're going to start over on the top right there. We have cross-site scripting, still the most common. It's nearly boring to find it everywhere. Nearly every web app will have a cross-site scripting issue. It's a weird one because it's an issue that can be understood quite well by developers. You know, often you'll say, hey, here's cross-site scripting issues. They will go fix it, and it's fine. Same app, maybe a few months down the line, new changes, etc. You'll find cross-site scripting issues again somewhere else. You know, seems to be something that I'm not sure if it's a training thing or what, but there's definitely a sort of a lack of organization's ability to sort of tackle that as a problem. Cross-site scripting obviously can be used for stuff like phishing and things like that. Prevalence and seems to be getting worse. So that's one thing there. We're not going to go through all of these, but I'll touch on most of them. Vulnerable components is another big one. This is stuff like third-party components but app layer stuff. So let's say jQuery or you run on Angular or things like that, React. Vulnerabilities in those components. 12%. Problems with authentication, that can be quite varied, that's quite high as well. We have here other injection. So we'll talk about SQL injection in a second. Anything that's not SQL injection is other injection. We split them out this way just because, the only really good news on the SQL injection side. Other injection stuff like operating system injection, XML injection, things like that. Still quite prevalent as well. External service interaction is one that has been creeping up a little bit. This is where you might be able to invoke force some back-end system to make maybe an arbitrary HTTP request or something like that. Something that's not particularly high risk, and there's sort of these weird attacks that people are trying to develop around exploiting these types of vulnerabilities. It's probably one of these maybe watch this space type vulnerability. It's all these things kind of, somebody finds out some really cool thing to do with it, and then the risk will then obviously increase. Source code disclosure is obviously bad. SQL injection, good news, is getting better. So we found that year on year. Probably due to, a few reasons. I suppose a lot of the newer frameworks, ORM and stuff like that, abstracts SQL, so developers don't have to write raw SQL queries anymore. And a lot of the stuff they turn on by default protections to protect against it. So that seems to be getting better, which is great, because the impact of those issues can be very, very high indeed. System exposure, this is one where a system shouldn't be exposed, is exposed. Malicious file upload, different types of information disclosure, which hackers can use to maybe learn more about your system. Sensitive of there being maybe there's a database string or a password that's disclosed. And then the other types of weaknesses as we go around. Cross-site request forgery is an interesting one. That was one that was on the OWASP top 10, the 2013 top 10. And again, it's not hugely prevalent. They've actually dropped it off the newer 2017 one, but it's there, but it's not the end of the world. So most common infrastructure vulnerabilities then, when we're talking about app layer, network layer. So here we have, sort of interesting, we've nearly 45% of issues by volume relating to SSL, TLS, and crypto cipher issues relating to that. Absolutely huge, just finds so many issues related to that. Again, there's a mixed bag there. Some of them can, the bulk of them are low, medium risk type issues. Some obviously get more severe. I suppose a lot of the last year, deprecated TLS versions and stuff like that, and people still have these things enabled, that probably explains why there's such a high volume of them there. They're widespread. SMB issues, nearly 29%. That's an interesting one because a lot of malware will target SMB. Server message box, stuff like file sharing, things like that. So issues relating to that, so there's lots of, I suppose, a big foothold for malware to grab onto. Then it jumps down a good bit, problems with OpenSSH, and OpenSSH, you'll find components will be part of many other different types of services that you might find, when we're doing network scanning. Again, a lot of those can be related to specific ciphers that might be enabled, and maybe part of those ciphers is a protocol that is deprecated. Remote desktop, man-in-the-middle issues. Probably shouldn't have remote desktop, enabled to the internet anyway. And then we go down to stuff like Telnet and, robot, again, more crypto and SSL issues. So the most common known vulnerabilities for external we found was nearly like 33%, which is crazy. Issues in relation to Windows Server 2003, which we still find everywhere. And obviously it's deprecated or it's unsupported. There's loads of known issues in it. If you find these systems, it's nearly a matter of time before it's such an avenue to hack that system. And then I suppose other interesting ones there are 7.5% of critical risk issues found were related to NotPetya CVEs. These are ones that leverage the SMB and a lot of the malware attacks and stuff like that. PHP and Apache also account for a huge amount of these issues. If anyone ever has involved in having to maintain those types of systems, there's always just an unbelievable amount of patches available at any given time. Internal, slightly different, but largely the same. A lot of SMB-related issues. Remote code execution related to remote desktop. Internal systems, we find a lot more higher prevalence of remote desktop, which sort of makes sense. I suppose from the Verizon DBR there last year, the third breach is involved internal actors. So, it's an area of focus that people, security is difficult, and you're trying to focus on everything, and I suppose you're trying to protect your front door and the stuff on the inside, and you can't neglect one or the other. It's a difficult trade-off. It's not easy to defend against all this stuff. Just an interesting take on the CVE landscape. CVE there is the common vulnerability and exposure. So anything with a product that has a vulnerability, somebody finds the vulnerability, it notifies, it could be Microsoft or whoever, they notify the National Vulnerability Database, they get a CVE identifier for that vulnerability, the vendor issues a patch, people patch, hopefully. The oldest one we found last year was from 1999. So we're not saying that that system's been live with that vulnerability since 1999. Probably somebody downloaded that particular vulnerable software and installed it in an internet accessible system. So that was a little bit depressing. But, if you think about 1999, that's, before iPhones and iPods. And it was a long time ago, and the internet was a very, very different place. So that was an issue with the FTP server. The most common one found last year was a 2015 CVE related to the bar mitzvah issue. Again, a medium risk issue there with the CVSS score 4.3. And interestingly, I suppose 80% of all systems had at least one known vulnerability. A little bit depressing. 70% had more than one, and then a fifth of systems had more than 10 known vulnerabilities. Hate to be all doom and gloom. So the positive spin, well, we might get to that. This is just looking at the CVE landscape by age. So, here's the stuff from depressingly the 1999 stuff, and then just the split between found in external versus internal systems. So the stuff found in calendar 2018, these would have been issues that people found in products in 2018. Patches were issued, people fixed. That's the, so by volume is a big mix there. So moving on to the exposed services, we call this the wall of shame. This is sort of a new one, and this is to do with the profiling piece. And what we've done here is we're looking at systems where you're sort of like a visibility piece. You're like looking at systems, detecting what ports might be open and what services are running on them. So there might not necessarily be a vulnerability in those. There may well be, and that's fine, and then those stats get covered in the other piece. This is just the presence of the port or service. So we found 3% had port 3389, which is RDP, remote desktop. So this is in an internet accessible system having an RDP service exposed. So anybody in the world can try to remote desktop to that. Likewise, SMB as well, so file sharing, so try to connect directly to a file share. Telnet's a big one, 0.23 there. FTP, and then database ports directly exposed to the internet. Database listeners, not a good idea. Hence, we call it the wall of shame. If you look at some of the stats on what the different types of ports that hackers or just the background noise from threat intelligence feeds, what types of ports people are looking for in the internet, these all feature heavily. In fact, Telnet is the most sought after port, which tells you that, if it's the most sought after, it's probably the easiest to try and hack and maybe has the best leverage if somebody does hack there. With all of these things, that if they're exposed, that you rely on compensating controls of around, username and passwords and stuff to protect against brute force attacks and stuff, but often by default you can just plot away and try to log into these systems over time, and then get breached that way. That's just the list from top down of the common ports. Now we excluded all the web ports because obviously web servers, stuff like proxy servers on 8080, 403, 80, we removed them from here because they're not that interesting. So. Time to fix is an interesting one. This is how long it takes people to fix stuff. I suppose it's interesting that you can look into different types of applications and you can see, maybe my third party developer is responsible for these three apps, and I can see that they're not fixing stuff very quickly at all. But in general, it takes 77 days to fix a vulnerability in the application layer, 69 days for critical risk, 83 for high risk. It's probably a bit high. I mean, the exposure window there is quite high. So this is the frequency from when you detect the vulnerability to them closing it off. On the network layer, it's shorter, which makes more sense, I suppose, because you know a lot of these things have known vulnerabilities and stuff that people can roll out the patches. But still, I don't know, I sort of feel it's not, you know, these are large exposure windows to vulnerabilities that organizations are aware of. That's how long people are taking to fix things. Quick PCI DSS view. If we think about PCI, anything above a CVSS score of 4 is an automatic fail. So looking at full stack stuff, 68% of issues found would fail a PCI scan, and then breaking into network is 57, and then 22% there would break the PCI scan. So I suppose just thinking about, you know, looking at that stuff and maybe how we should refocus maybe on, I suppose on the bread and butter of security. I suppose, you know, vulnerability management, it's not the sexiest piece in security, you know, and a lot of its stuff can be quite dull and boring. But, you know, there's a huge amount of quick and easy wins there if we maybe try to focus on, I suppose, just getting a better hold on that. And again, it's not always that easy. And, you know, one piece of it is the visibility piece. It's, you know, knowing what do I have and where is it, and you know, and only when I get a grasp of, you know, where things are, can I actually get a handle on how I can try and secure all these different systems. And it's difficult. You know, you can't fix what you can't see and all that kind of stuff. So from a visibility standpoint, we're talking about things like, obviously, you know, what ports do I have exposed, what systems, what IP addresses are even live at any given time. You know, we find interesting stuff where the developers are, not to blame developers for stuff, but somebody might just spin a system up on an internet-facing IP and forget about it or leave it there. It seems to be quite popular, or maybe popular is the wrong word, common with cloud stuff as well. You know, people, it's so easy to spin up a box, people leave it there. You know? So without the visibility of, hey, this box just popped up, you know, you don't know, your perimeter's sort of changing. You know, what services are running on that box at any given time? What then other stuff do I have there? Do I've got an application there, APIs, etc.? And we're really talking about mapping out your attack surface. That's the stuff that you just have. Then, obviously, on the visibility standpoint, looking a bit deeper, maybe, you know, what vulnerabilities do I have in those systems, the known stuff, and then we have the... you know, the more unique stuff, the web app vulnerabilities, things that you have to test for differently, and then even deeper than the logical vulnerabilities, things like that. I suppose it's interesting that there was an article a couple of months ago that the US military is struggling to find all of their IT systems, and you're kind of thinking, well, if the US military can't do it, what help do I have? You know, but it just shows that it's a problem that's prevalent for every organization. You know, and you know, these things are hard. Patching is another huge one. Again, it's not the sexiest of things to do in an organization, but it's really, really underestimated in importance, I think. You know, it's interesting, and you try to tease out why are people not patching. Like, they know, you know, these things are there, you know, but again, it's not too easy. It's not too it's not that easy. There's too many patches, I think, in general. It's a weird sort of... software's weird in that the customer is now attuned to accepting the fact that people will give them software and that it's up to them, it's their responsibility to patch it, to fix it. That, you know, people can push crappy code, effectively. And, you know, and it's the consumer's fault that they didn't patch it. Which is a weird sort of dynamic that's sort of nearly accepted. I don't think it should be that way. Again, but it's difficult to, you know, it takes a lot more effort to build and write secure code. It's a lot more time and cost involved. Again, problems with patching, then there's the legacy stuff, stuff that people just don't, the team that was written in COBOL or whatever, you know, the team that did that, they've gone and there's nobody there, nobody knows how it works. And then you have the notion of the stuff that you just can't really patch very easily, like the IoT stuff, appliances. Like you think, now I have to patch my fridge. Hey, you know, what are you going to do there? And you know, you're going to put some code on an SD card, find your fridge. You know, it's just messy stuff. You know, so that's where we are with that. And from a patching standpoint, you know, I think from the operating system side of stuff, that's easier. It's the Microsoft Patch Tuesday stuff. We can just roll it out. It's been well tested. Great. But the other bits are difficult. Firmware stuff. Firmware is difficult. It's like the IoT stuff. People aren't going to deal with that regularly. Service framework stuff is interesting in that if we think about things that our applications run on, like Apache or Struts or Spring, these types of application frameworks, we find tons and tons of vulnerabilities at that layer that are just not fixed. And some of the Struts vulnerabilities and stuff that are out there are really, really bad. But, you know, by applying a patch at something like that, you've broken your application code and you need your developers to actually change your code. So you can see why these things aren't done, but it's something that we need to sort of, thought about. Secure application development shouldn't make you sad. That's where I was going with that one. And just in case you're not a cat lover, there's a little dog picture there too. So, secure application development. This really, I suppose, where it all stems back to, and everything is really just software at the end of the day, whether it's your application or it's, you know, your low level, whatever, your network issue, it's still somebody's written software there with the bug. And I suppose, you know, the notion of pushing left, you know, so we're trying to do more in our SDLC as early as possible. That's great. We're doing all these different types of things with automated tool chains, etc. So there's also the notion of pushing, you know, both ways, the right stuff. You know, you can deploy, you write very secure code, it goes through the whole SDLC, everything, you're doing scanning, you're testing, it's, you know, code review, brilliant. It's deployed and everything's fully patched. Great, that system should be secure. But then in a post-deployment phase, if we're not paying attention to it, we may not change the code, but tomorrow some component that runs on, we call it the software food chain, because you know, you don't just write code and it's there on its own. You've got so many third-party components and stuff that are the back of that. Vulnerability comes in there, and then obviously if you're not paying attention, your application's all of a sudden vulnerable. So moving on with that sort of thought, I suppose, is the notion of, you know, automation and leveraging you know, automation in the SDLC, pulling all your tool chain stuff together, using things like SOAR, etc. You know, I suppose a lot of people fall into the trap where you know, these security issues, you buy the shiny box, plug it in, you just want it to work. Hopefully it'll do away with some people on your security team or not. I suppose from that standpoint, I think it's very much about, you know, leveraging the people that you have and knowing where to place where automation and systems and tools and scanners and stuff like that work, and then knowing where you need to use people, because you really need people in this stuff involved heavily. Trying to leverage as much, you know, trying to help them do their job as much as possible. You can't use automation alone. I mean, automation, it's great at finding certain types of vulnerabilities and things like that, but it's useless at so many other types as well. Other very, you know, impactful issues and stuff like that. So we're talking about, you know, leveraging the two together is one way to do it. And another sort of thing, just to I suppose to bring to the forefront of your mind, I guess, is, you know, don't sweat the zero days. There's so many advanced attacks and things like that out there. People are freaking out about, you know, the latest zero day, etc. Unless you work for a very unique company, most organizations, people are not going to bother using a zero day on your company. They're just too expensive. Like, you're talking upward of $100,000 to leverage a zero day. And once it's been used, that's it. It's out in the wild and it's gone. It's useless. Only nation state stuff, you know, Uber, hacker, criminal gangs, very target stuff are going to be using this stuff. For the most majority of organizations, you know, that stuff is, you know, if you think about where we are with the CVE landscape, that's such rich pickings for most organizations, and it's relatively easy, you know, with a bit of planning, etc., to sort of manage that and bring these down. That focusing on that stuff is probably a better use of your time than stressing out on the unknowns. So that's it. Thank you. If you're interested in the SAS report, it's available on our website. And I know it's lunchtime now, so if anyone wants to ask any questions, great. But if not, feel free to head, and I'll be downstairs anyway for the rest of the day if you want to chat. So thank you very much for your time.